Let me ask, sir, why did you choose to run for U.S. Senate? I know that's a question I'm sure you've been getting a lot, but it's a question I'm starting with on everybody.
Sure. Well, I'm trying to restore the American dream for South Dakota. We have a lot of problems that we need to address in this country, and we seem to be kicking the can down the road. A number of career politicians keep coming up with some standard, out-of-the-way things that are just unbelievable to me. We learned about another government program earlier today where they're going to try and calculate how much methane a cow gives off, and we're going to do a study on that. It just seems like we have our priorities way out of whack. We need to balance the budget. If we don't balance the budget, nothing else happens, and we're running red ink like no tomorrow.
And is this a concern if a family doesn't balance its checkbook, that family gets in trouble, right? Is it the same
most
thing?
Definitely. At some point, they'll actually reach bankruptcy. And if our country doesn't start addressing some of these problems, the interest every year grows, and that's the fastest growing part of our budget is the interest. If we don't start addressing this, we're going to have to make some very hard choices in the future of either raising taxes or cutting spending across the board and slash it. We have to start addressing the budget. My plan is to cut the corporate tax rates. We have corporate tax rates of about 35%. They're the highest, some of the highest in the world. If we cut them from 35 to 25, we can actually grow this economy, about 5.3 million jobs over the next 10 years. But the problem is not on the income side. It's how we spend it. As my father always taught me, it's not how much you make, son. It's how much you spend. And that seems so true for the government. We're spending at the rate of $2.6 billion a day. Not million, billion, that we don't have. We have to start addressing that. I like a plan called the penny plan. You take $1 for every 100 you spend and you cut it. It's not a Washington math where they go up $5 and come down one. It's actually go from 100 back to 99. And you do it across the board, so we're not picking winners and losers. Everybody feels the pain, but we can do it gradually. But if we can get the income side up and actually get some of these people to apply the income towards the budget versus continuing to spend it, we can obviously do it a little sooner than that.
You have some experience in the U.S. military. Is that something you think is an asset to this job?
I really do. I've got 17 years in. I went through the University of South Dakota ROTC program back in the day, as my father did. My father actually went to Vietnam and served, and that's how I followed him in that tradition. I've actually got 17 years and counting. I'm still in the Army Reserves. I've been on 3 tours so far. I've been to Germany, Iraq, and Afghanistan. I was awarded a Bronze Star, and I was actually honored before Congress in 2006. I believe that that brings a lot of strength of character and values that I've learned, but also discipline. We have to have some discipline in the people we send to Washington. I've also had to work with NATO and other foreign countries on getting problems done and figuring out how to get them solved. And sometimes they come at a very different angle than you do. We worked with the British to build schools and also to, you know, bring teachers in and bring the supplies that they needed. Sometimes you had to work very hard to build a consensus. Everybody wants to be first to get their project done, but if you work together, you can gradually get everybody's project done. And I do believe that that is the best way to handle things.
Is that something you can bring to Washington, is consensus building and working together? Because there's a lot of critics who say that that's not happening at all right now, that Democrats and Republicans can't get along. What would you do to bridge those gaps?
I do believe I can address that issue. I believe that communication is key in any kind of relationship, from the state and local level all the way up to Washington, D.C., if you don't communicate with the other side or members of your own party, right now the Republican Party seems to be more intent on tearing itself apart than to actually solving some of the problems. We have to offer ideas to solve the problems. And so building a consensus, I would simply sit down with every U.S. senator all the way across the board, and I would say, here are the top 10 things I want to get done. Is there anything that you want to get done? Let's see your top 10 list. And we may not agree on number one or two on our priority list, but maybe down the road we can find some common ground. And I will always come back and talk to the people here in South Dakota. I don't want to be a politician. I never want to be a politician. I want to be a statesman, somebody that looks after the entire state and the interest of the country first. We have too many career politicians that are worried about getting reelected versus doing what is right for the country. These career politicians have run up $17 trillion and they're continuing to give us plans like Obamacare that are overwhelmingly unpopular. And I believe that we can do better, and we have to send people like that to D.C. to correct the problem. Luckily, in the last couple cycles, we've sent three or four of those senators there that had never been elected and doing what I'm trying to do. And they're the ones that have been stirring the pot a little bit. And if we don't continue to send people like that, we'll continue to get the same.
You mentioned the Republican Party tearing itself apart. Of course, there are five Republican candidates running in this. Are you concerned that the primary campaign could get negative enough to damage the party in South Dakota overall?
Well, that, and we've had two Republicans leave the party and have indicated they're going to run as independents. We have a gentleman that was a senator, and he came out first, and now we have somebody who is basically trying to hold the party hostage. If we don't nominate his choice, then he's going to run as independent. If we have three Republicans, obviously, in the fall general election, it's going to be much more difficult to win versus having a one-on-one matchup with the Democrat opponent. And I believe we spend a lot of time trying to define ourselves of who's more conservative or who's more got the best integrity. You hear a lot of fluff speeches from some of my opponents. I'm the one trying to talk about ideas. And what do? We cannot just be the party of no. We have to offer our own ideas and own solutions. And I guess I'd challenge you to, as you interview my opponents, to pin them down to some specifics. What are you going to do, or what is your proposal to actually get some of these things done?
One thing I've been asking a lot of folks about is the Affordable Care Act, also known by many as Obamacare. If you support repealing it, what needs to go in its place? According to the government right now, there are 7 million Americans who are insured, many who weren't before. What happens to folks who've received health insurance that didn't have it before?
Well, I like a plan out of Oklahoma. There's a gentleman who was a doctor who became a U.S. senator named Tom Coburn. And he has one called the Patient Care Act. He looked at it not as just as a senator, but as a doctor, and said, you know, this Obamacare is not going to work. But yes, we have people going on to Medicaid and also getting insurance plans. And the president's number is deceiving. He says 7.1 million. But if you look deeper into that number, there's only about 700,000 to 800,000 who got insurance who didn't have it before. So you got to move slowly. Next, he's only implemented part of it at this point. So we have a chance yet to repeal and replace it with something like the Patient Care Act. If we do that, we won't have to suffer through the employer mandate. The president has picked and chose who are the winners and losers on a bill. That is not our process. The legislative body passes it, the president signs it, and puts it into effect. And now he's chosen to step back and only implement parts.
There are economists out there like Paul Krugman and even economists here in South Dakota who say the deficit isn't a real problem. They point to the deficit incurred after World War II, that the economy grew and absorbed that deficit. We never actually paid it back. They say this is a manufactured issue created by Republicans in order to use scare tactics. And I want to give you a chance to respond to this.
Well, I would disagree with Mr. Krugman and others that say that. If you look back at history, our the percent of the debt compared to the GDP is way different. We have 102% of the entire gross domestic product. What the gross domestic product is all the goods and manufacturing that the United States does in a year. We have more debt than that. If you put in a little more perspective, we had Ross Perot run 20 years ago. He was kind of a quirky little figure, but he was complaining about the debt back then. It was $4 trillion in 1992. I looked it up. And we are now at $17 trillion and rising. We have quadrupled the debt in the last 20 years, and we're running half a trillion to $1 trillion deficits every year. That is just not sustainable. And meanwhile, it's become a national security issue because China is growing. Their economy is growing, they're fast approaching our economy, and they're using it as leverage in such things as the Russian debacle is going on in Crimea. They're leveraging their debt against us and saying, hey, you know, if you step in there, America, we may call some of our notes due. And they own over $1 trillion of our debt. And if we do not start addressing the debt, we're going to have to make some tough choices. And so I would respectfully disagree with Mr. Krugman.
One of those tough choices folks are saying we need to make if we're going to address the debt is cut the military. And you being in the military formerly, critics say, you know, we've spent way too much on Iraq and Afghanistan, and we need to drastically reduce military spending. What's your take on that call?
Well, we have to reduce all spending in a common sense way. We did the sequester, which took a hatchet to the debt, versus, like I had mentioned, the penny plan, where we gradually across the board. This president has addressed this issue by first attacking veterans. The veterans are, as myself, I will always be somebody to take care of veterans, but we cut $6.2 billion out of the last budget in December that was earmarked to go to veterans. I would have opposed that. We have crazy programs that career politicians have brought us where we spend $17 billion a year on breast implants. If we seriously have our priorities in line if we're spending money on that and not taking care of our veterans? The next thing he's trying to do is cut our military back to pre-World War II levels. Well, first off, I disagree with that. We have to have peace through strength, as President Reagan used to tell us, not peace through weakness. If we cut our military like they're intending, we will not be able to address some of these foreign affairs problems that we have. Next, he wants to cut the commissaries. The commissaries are like a grocery store for the military folks, and they especially hard-hitting. That will be especially hard-hitting to E1s to E5s. They're younger soldiers who don't make as much money. And if we get rid of the commissaries, that will impact their lives directly. Then he wants to get rid of the A-10 Warthog. This is an essential plane. It saves lives. If we cut out the A-10 Warthog, we will lose lives. Bottom line, we have to cut. If we're going to cut, we have to do it smartly. We need to take a scalpel, not a hatchet, to the budget. And the president, in doing these cuts with the military, is not going to take that savings and then reduce the debt. He's actually going to take that savings and put into more social programs. So again, we're picking winners and losers. And I think that he is making the wrong decision.
Should you end up facing the Democrat, his main criticism, Rick Weiland, is that Washington is run by the rich, that we, the people, common folks, don't really have a say anymore, that politicians can be easily bought and sold, especially in the wake of Citizens United and other recent Supreme Court decisions. I want to give you a chance to respond to this notion that democracy is largely dead in the United States because of the power of very rich.
Well, I don't believe in democracy is dead. In 2010, the people rose up and said, we don't want Obamacare. We're going to send some people to D.C. to try and correct that problem. And they did. And they, like I said, they've sent four U.S. senators who had not been elected before. They sent real people there that have started to address the issue. I believe that I am about as real of a person in this race as possible. I do not believe that you should only see your senator or congressman on TV. They need to get out there, and that's why I've tried to go out to every county. I've been reaching out to the Indian reservations, also the bilingual community in Sioux Falls, and I've been registering new voters. Get them involved in the process. The best thing you can do is educate people about the issues and get them motivated and activated in the system. If they care more about their government, you'll get better responsive government. They'll be more involved with the issues. I disagree with Mr. Weiland on the fact that he believes that money is the only way. I believe I've made a lot of strides and progress in getting my message out there by actually doing a lot of hard work. I put myself through college. I've been on three deployments. I'm not afraid of hard work, and I believe that hard work can overcome some of those things. I will never take money from somebody I do not agree with. Money, while nice, there are a lot more important things than money in life. And I think if you work hard, you can get to where you need to be. But again, this race is not about me. It's about our country. And we need to move forward positively. And if we just pick and judge people on how much money they have, I think we'll continue to get the same career politicians that we've had throughout time and who have, frankly, run up $17 trillion. And I don't think I can run up $17 trillion.
Mike Rounds is seen by many pundits as the front runner in this race. He has the most money and is doing the most fundraising. What does it take to beat a candidate like this? There are many who just consider Rounds the shoe-in for both the primary and the election. Do you really think you have a chance against him?
Well, I do believe I have a chance against him. Yes, he has a lot of money. But how do you make up that difference? You get out there and you work. I think it is very sad that I am the fifth person to join this race, and I am the first person in so many towns that you would be astonished that I was the first person to go talk there. Mike Rounds is a career politician who ran up a lot of debt when he was governor. He's out there saying, now we balance the budget. Well, talk is cheap. I talk to people like the teachers in our schools who had to have a 10% cut. And I would credit Governor Dugard for coming in and making a sound decision. Wasn't real popular at the time. He did a 10% across the board cut. If there was no budget deficit, why did we have to make this cut? And I think people can, you know, relate to that. Next, Governor Rounds also has a potential scandal that we are all talking about, and they want to seem to try to ignore it. But if you go out and talk to the people, as I've been trying to find out what issues are important to them, not just what politicians tell them they're going to do for them, what do the people think is important, and what are they talking about? Well, they're talking about that economic development scandal called EB-5, and that has the potential either now or in the general election to derail his candidacy. And I don't think with the fate of the country in the balance that we can take that big of a risk. I say that because the United States Senate this year, Republicans have an opportunity to pick up 6 seats, and if they do so, they'll take control of the United States Senate. And in South Dakota, as you know, we have a Democrat senator, Senator Johnson, who has decided to retire, and this is an opportunity for the Republicans to pick up that seat. Can we risk the fate of the country on having this potential scandal? I don't think so.
Are you seeing the kind of transparency you'd like to see on the EB-5 program? Are you able to get access to the kind of information that you think should be publicly available regarding this case?
Well, I believe in as much transparency as we can allow in the government. Barring some extreme national security issue, I believe we should have our government be as open as possible. Obviously, more and more documents are coming out every day. They're continuing to have a few more stories now about it and getting documents. And also, the Northern Beef Packers plant up in Aberdeen is going through bankruptcy, so those documents are accessible. But if you look at that investment, I'll use that word loosely, investment of $115 to $120 million, and now they've gone through bankruptcy, and we've got $40 million that we're going to get out of it. They lost approximately $80 million. So I don't know if we can afford to send somebody like Mike Rounds to D.C.
I want to ask about the EB-5 program overall. Do you believe it's a good program for the country? Is it something you would support if you were in the U.S. Senate?
I have a lot of trouble with the EB-5 program. There's also been a scandal in Mississippi that has ensnared the Virginia governor. This program seems to buy citizenship. We have a lot of talk about immigration, of how people are coming across the border from Mexico and trying to get citizenship. Now we have people trying to buy citizenship to invest in the country. And I believe that's troubling not only for economic reasons, it's also troubling for national security reasons of who are these people that are coming in and trying to buy our citizenship. Is our citizenship for sale? I think a close review, I would not say right now I'm totally against that program. I would like to have a thorough review of that program if we have it and go forward.
I'd like to circle back to the economy if I can.
Okay.
You mentioned reducing corporate taxes as a way to stimulate the economy. Critics might say that trickle-down economics is dead, and that is part of the reason we came into this recession in the first place, is that corporate profits on the high end are only increasing, and that's leaving the rest of us behind. How do you respond to that argument?
Well, I disagree. I believe it was actually under President Clinton, a Democrat, who actually tried this program back in the 90s, and it actually worked, and we actually did create a lot of jobs. And so if we create the jobs, those people obviously are paying more taxes. And we have actually about $4 trillion sitting offshore that they're not investing in America. They're keeping the money offshore because our corporate taxes are too high. obviously, if we can get those people back to work, which we need to do in this country, we need to get people back to work, we have one of the lowest participation rates in this country's history. We lose more people, it seems like, every month, but the unemployment number stays the same. Well, they've tinkered with the formula a little bit, and even though they say the unemployment rate's only 6.7, if you factor in all the people who are not working, you know, it's actually in the 12 to 15% range, and obviously that's very troubling on many levels.
Mr. Rounsberg, thanks so much for your time. Is there anything else that you'd like to add that I should include or that I should be asking, another line of questioning that I might not be thinking about?
Well, just a couple quick points. One of the most appalling things that Congress does is they have all these special perks for themselves. I would always offer introduce an amendment that says if this law, when it's passed, will apply to Congress and the president and everybody else. Nobody is above the law. And if they want to vote against that law and say, no, we want to be above the law, at least they're going to be on record, and then voters can decide if they want to retain that person or not. But at least put them on record. Right now, again, we're not getting votes in the Senate, and things are going on, like Obamacare, where they're not responding to the will of the people. I've also made the pledge that I would not take any kind of pay increase or pension until we balance the budget. We have to get the budget back in line. And if we don't, the whole country is in jeopardy. We pay $30 million a year to ex-congressmen and senators for nothing. They get golden pension plans after 5 years, and I think that's absolutely appalling. None of my opponents will take such a pledge, or I haven't heard them say that they will do something similar. And I guess, again, I'd challenge you to throw that out to them. Are they there for themselves or the good of the country? I'm a private citizen who just got fed up enough to say, let's throw the bums out. And I'm trying to carry through. And I'm also trying to get my opponents to be pinned down on where they stand on the issues. Because I sat at home and I watched some of these spectacles and said, I don't know where they stand. And frankly, I don't know where they stand on a few issues yet, but luckily we're going to have some debates coming up and maybe we can get them to respond. Lastly, I would say, if people would like to get involved and help me restore the American dream back to South Dakota, they can find me at www.jason4southdakota.com. I'm also on Facebook by that same name, and Twitter's my name, Jason Rounsberg. And we would appreciate their assistance and help to do the good that we need to do for our country.
Mr. Rounsberg, thanks so much again for your time.
Thank you, and I appreciate you inviting me, and I hope to come back again.